What's up, everybody? Anthony Frieda here. Welcome back to Padum Biz. I got a special treat for you. This is Lawrence Haber, his third time back. Unfortunately, he's not in studio with me, but we set up something really special for you. It's a Zoom cast, and he's home at his place, and we just wanted to be safe. You know what I mean? We're in the winter. We're in the thick of 2021, so man, thanks for doing this, dude.
Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor and a pleasure. I mean that.
Of course, man. You're the first guest of this show. So, like, you got to be the first guest of the new year as well. So, so you've kept yourself like really busy. The listeners haven't heard our conversation since before this pandemic world. And that's interesting to me. So I'm like, and I know what you've been up to. Like, you kept yourself really busy musically during this time. So, like, I can't wait for you to share kind of what you've been up to. A lot of practicing, and you've written some music and released some music too.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
It has been, it seems like it's all one season. I had a friend call it COVID season, because the idea of a season is something that will have an end, as opposed to just the crisis or however people want to refer to it, that gives it sort of a negative long form connotation. So during this COVID season, which really goes back almost a year, basically a year, when March shut down, the 70 to 100 gigs I probably would have had from March through the end of last year pretty much all dried up. I did a handful of things over the summer and the early fall when things opened up, but I knew early on in the beginning of the crisis, when the real lockdown time happened, if you will, that I needed to adapt, and if I wanted to keep my chops up, of course, and also just to be creative and honestly to put content out. Not performing in public and gigging and something I'm very used to seemed like a loss at first. And then I began to realize that although I was going to miss that, it wasn't happening for the right reasons, safety and all of that kind of thing. And it also allowed me to really revisit things that I had wanted to revisit for a long time and explore things on the base that I had never explored. One great example is on the upright bass. I really wanted to get my chops up with the bow, playing arco. I never really put the time in that I wanted to when I was younger. So I, every day for maybe a half an hour at the beginning of my practice routine, I would just do a half an hour of long tones, open strings, scales, just to get it happening. And it still sounds pretty terrible to my ears, but it's coming along. And the cool part is it's part of my routine now every day. And it's also making my chops, playing with my fingers, playing pizzicato, unbelievable, in my opinion. I mean, I feel better getting around on the instrument because that is an instrument where you can atrophy very easily if you don't play every day, every other day at the minimum for a sizable amount of time, because it's just a monster. So that was the first practice choice. And then the sort of the second immediate decision was I'm going to really go after the social media game and try and crack the code a little bit. Not so much at first deliberately. That kind of happened over time when I realized, oh, there's a way to do this. But as opposed to just posting tonight's office photos, for those of you who know that meme of just the picture of your gear at the gig, and the occasional Instagram noodle video or YouTube noodle video where I'm just kind of soloing or transcribing something, I decided to really create unique, different short form Instagram content. And I decided to do that Monday and Friday as a regimen and try and get the recording quality as best I could, and the audio and video quality, the video quality in addition to the audio quality, up to par, which I'm still learning about lighting and you know, frame rates and all this kind of stuff. And just to have a discipline, to have a gig to look forward to. You know, the gig was to have a cool Monday post and a cool Friday post, and to mix it up so that there was some upright, there was some electric playing, there was some just sort of compositional stuff and collaborative stuff. I mean, you were the first person I ever collaborated with online with a little collaboratory project we've done. But I reached out to sort of select musicians I knew who I thought would be interested to do that kind of thing, these little side-by-side video things where I'd send a bass line or even a little mini song and they would play drums or guitar. And then I would put together the video, and then it would be a minute, and I call it a musical statement, not even a song, just a minute musical statement for Instagram, like pure Instagram content. And then I would port that over to YouTube and try to grow both things at the same time. Those were the two big things that I've been doing since March of last year. And I've gotten what I think are some pretty good results for that.
Dude, it's awesome to hear that, man. It's funny. I was going to say, like, when you were talking about getting the social media game, I was going to be like, oh, you got TikTok videos out? Like, you dancing?
TikTok is the one thing I haven't tried yet. Twitch is the one I really want to explore in the future. I think there's great possibilities there for musicians, especially because it's sort of new. It's been around for over a decade, but since Amazon got it, I think they own it, and the video game world's really sort of come along with the playthroughs and all that. I was going to say play-alongs with the playthroughs. It's become its own little economy and its own little way of doing concerts. I mean, I think at the beginning of COVID, everybody was sitting in their bedroom playing acoustic guitar to their iPhone, you know, singing covers or playing drums and not realizing that everything was distorted. And then I started to realize, like, if you're going to do this, I think you want to do it to the best of your ability so you stand out above everyone else, and so you get noticed. And I think the Twitch phenomenon, that is a place where people have already figured it out. They understand how to use...
I mean, that idea of, you know, it's just so funny. Like, even when you mentioned TikTok, right? Like, yeah, I yesterday or the other day was looking on TikTok. Okay, what musician, content is on there? And the only thing I've seen is it's like the drummer's version to the person doing the dance to the song that's playing. Like, with, I guess there's this. They have it worked out where you could just use licensed music for your content. It works out that way, and it's like the person, the drummer, doing like a little, like, it could be a minute long of a drum cover, you know what I mean? So it's not that different than what you see already on YouTube or Instagram. It's just, I guess, streamlined a little, quicker to get to. The hashtagging system is way better, I guess, than on YouTube. You can make your videos look fun, but I'm also, now you got me thinking about Twitch. So it's like, yeah, people literally sit down and watch somebody play a video game.
That's exactly what it is.
Watch them look, what they look like playing a video game too. It's not just the game. And it's interesting to think, like, people donate money to those people, and that's their job, playing.
That's their job.
8 hours a day of a video game. And of course, because of how often they're playing, how many hours a day, they get really good at it, of course.
Right, right. And then the people who watch get good at it too. And honestly, it should be called niche or niche, because that's what it is. It's I think, the ultimate realization of this niche market economy of where everything's sort of compartmentalized by what people's interests are, bass or guitar or video games or certain types of video games, whatever. And that is a place where the very specific audience of people will go and sort of binge watch. And instead of binge watching the new Marvel Studios releases or Game of Thrones or Food Network, they're binge watching something else that they like to do, which in this case is video games. But you also just get people on there. I mean, I'm not on there yet, but from what I've seen, what I've researched, you just get people who are browsing the channels, channel surfing, like we used to do when we were kids with the remote control and we're bored, just looking through the channels before we had all these streaming options. And so you're going to get followers from that too, because it's all about your personality, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these internet phenomena that are out there YouTube channels. It's all about the host. It's all about the presentation. It's obviously about the content too. But if you don't have that together, people will move on very quickly, and that's why the production is important, I think.
If we were to now think about us as the fan base, like you and me, and what we're into, and very very niche, I guess. So, like, the only thing I can think of, maybe you'll agree or disagree, I don't know, but I can't go to the 55 bar on a Thursday night anymore to go see Wayne Krantz Trio, for instance, right? If Wayne Krantz was able to get the shit together to put, you know, to get his musicians in a room, camera it up, and do a Twitch stream of that show, right? It's improvised, right? You would watch that.
Absolutely.
I would watch that, right? Like, and that is a good idea on paper. Like, even Now versus Now,
mm-hmm.
I would watch JoJo Mayer and Nerve if they were to, you know what I mean? I would pay $10 or whatever it is to watch that, even if it's just them improvising for 2 hours.
Yeah, because it's what you're into, it's what you dig, and it's easy and it's not that expensive.
But then the question is then, how many of us are there? Like, how many of you and I type of customers, if you want to call them, are there versus the market that you're talking about, which is the more expanded, maybe the non-musical nerds, you know, the non-obsessed musical fans, not musicals, not musical theater. But you know what I'm saying?
Fans of Rent.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, like what would that look like to get the people, the same thing of, like, can we reduce, I mean, is this harsh, but is it, can we reduce the people that watch others play video games to, they're a type of consumer just wants to watch other people live life? Like,
well, I think there's a deep and wide marketing to any of this stuff. I mean, like, if Krantz gets, you know, Tim LaFave and Keith Carlock together and they do a 2-hour live stream. I mean, a lot of people have done this from the 55 or wherever. I mean, the 55 would be very special because that's, if you had that trio in that venue, there are the fans of the 55 bar who'd watch. There are the Krantz specific fans. There are the bass player people who love Tim. There are the drummer people who love Keith. And then there's people who love New York. That's a New York cultural thing. So you could market that in a number of ways to build that audience out. But then there's sort of the wider audience, which is, that is still intensely specific. Whereas if it's, I don't know, David Letterman doing a live from New York music thing, and it's Wayne and it's Billy Joel and it's whoever, then that is going to reach a lot more people. But the niche audience might not check it out because it's now, they might feel watered down because they have to sit through these other things they might not be interested in. So I think what everybody's learning now with all these platforms is what do I want to do with this?
Sure.
You know, what do I want to present here? Like, I know it's, for me, it's a lot of bass content. I do a lot of transcriptions. I do a lot of original jams, collaboration videos, showing technique things. Every now and then I'll do a teaching thing. But that is very specific to bass players, mostly electric bass players. And honestly, most people are interested in gear. The stuff that gets the most likes is pictures of basses with nice finishes, or, you know, people love, and I love gear more than anybody, and I like all that stuff too. But you have to choose how you're going to use your account, basically. After a while, your friends and family and your cousins are going to stop liking videos of you in your room playing your bass because it's not for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there to encourage you on your journey, but of course they're going to check out because it's just the same to them. There's no difference between you playing Anthony Jackson on a Chaka Khan play along and slapping it or playing some chords or just tuning your strings. They don't know any difference. So if you're going to focus on that, then you have to know that that's really your audience. So I guess, I mean, I'm not sure what the exact question is, but I think just to address what you were saying, it just seems that you have to have a really good plan that you want to execute if you're going to get the most bang for your buck out of these things, whether it's through monetization or just followers and interest. Because when COVID started, I mean, if you opened Instagram, if you looked at the stories, everyone was going live. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And like Questlove was doing like a vinyl club night every night. And it was cool because you were like watching Questlove in his house, like spin records that he liked.
Sure.
But then it gets old because, you know, you're 35 days into a quarantine thing. And it's like, I'm reminded again that I'm home. I got to watch, you know, I've seen this a million times. I need something new. So now I'm going to watch, you know, Tiger King or something, whatever. But again, it's sort of knowing what you're trying to accomplish, honestly, going into it with a plan. And that's been my biggest lesson this year, truthfully, about my musical pursuits is a plan.
So real fast, because you got me spinning with Twitch now. So then, it sounds as though Twitch is just an open slate. Twitch is a stage and a room with seats, a sound system. And if you choose to go in there and do a drum clinic or a bass clinic, that could be what that is. It could be educational. Or if you go in and like, if I go in, all right, I'm going to test every one of these Istanbul Agop cymbals. I got the whole line here. You know, this is what this line sounds like. I mean, that would be ridiculous because I'd spend thousands of dollars for nothing. But you know what I'm saying? I'm just thinking like, or a jam session, you know, collaborative jam session, just me noodling. I mean, I guess there are no rules.
There are no rules. It's all about engagement too. It's all about people are entering the chat. You say hello to them. You acknowledge them. And these are people who are interested in browsing through all these channels and landing on something that they can leave on for hours at a time while they're doing their homework or they're cooking or they're just hanging out. And they're like, oh, I like how this guy's talking. Oh, this is funny. Oh, he happens to play drums. Or the drummers will find you and they'll watch because they're like, this guy's a great player. His gear is, you know, is everything's mic'd up well. It sounds, it looks great. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to listen to him, you know, and then if you do a good job and you're engaging them and you're friendly and they'll come back. But then you understand that these are not people that are just, you know, generally swinging through, scrolling through. These are people who are investing. The successful Twitch people, Twitch artists, whatever you want to call them, Twitchers, they're on there for hours at a time. And I know people who do 5, 6, 7, 8 hours Twitch streams because they're making money doing that. But you're really, that's your gig now. And it pays, but it doesn't pay that kind of money. So that's also a thought like, well, do I really want to spend time here? Or I could maybe make YouTube content. And with YouTube, I'm now leveraging the Google algorithm, which is the strongest in the world. And, you know, the YouTube nut is a bit easier to crack because many people have. There are ways to do that. Consistency, quality, length of video, titling, screenshots, all of these things. It's known. It's a known commodity. You can follow, in my example, for bass, Scott's bass lessons, or we talked about Yannick Wasdala is another one. There are a few people on there that they've got the market trust. They're trusted in the market because they're knowledgeable. They're premium content because it's colorful and lively and it's cleanly produced, and you could tell time was put into it and care. And there's a following already. So yeah. Outside of the following, you can kind of do everything else. And if you're just consistent and every week or every day you're posting, like Rick Beato, if you know Rick Beato, and Adam Neely's another one, these are sort of the bigger YouTube streamers, YouTubers, if you will. These people have a method to their madness, if you will. There is a system and a science between every element of what they present, consistency and quality being the big two. And they have a trust. So if you build that trust and everything stays consistent, you'll get the following over time on YouTube. Twitch, it's hard to know because you might just get people on Twitch who just like you. They don't care that you're playing drums. You're just funny. You know, you're just interesting and they like your personality. And then they might start asking you about movies you like or comic books or current events or whatever. So it's very different. So YouTube is, for its size, it is still niche in a way, but yeah. it reaches the universe of the internet. It's yeah. Google. It's a Google product. Whereas yeah. Instagram does that, but it doesn't do it in nearly the same way. And you can't monetize it in the same way, you know.
Gotcha. So like basically, for any,
and I'm not a disclaimer, I'm not an expert on any of this stuff. This is just the type of stuff I've gotten into more this year because I haven't had a choice. But it's also interesting to me because I love the idea of not having to rely on anybody to, one, give me a creative outlet and, frankly, validate my musical ego.
I mean, well, that's a...
I was being too honest there.
But what we're talking about really is like, there are no 70 gigs a year. So, you know, all right, I can't even really leave the house. There's no reason to leave the house because there's no gig to be had. So I got to make the gig, sort of. But it's not one of those things of the gig. I got the gig and I'm going to get $100 for the gig. That doesn't exist. So it's essentially creating a funnel for traffic.
And yes. I mean, truthfully, it's not for me from that standpoint. It's, you know, the money from the gigs and the money from social media engagement. It's, you know, not even the same universe, but that was never my intent for it. Although that is an obvious consequence or outcome of doing it well consistently.
Sure.
And also you control your own destiny at that point too, which you really can't with gigs. You can't, as we learned this year, it's funny. I said on one of the podcasts we did, I went on this rant about how that this could go away. This could go away in a minute. And it literally did. It like Thanos came in and he snapped his fingers. And so went the world as we know it, including every professional live gigging situation and for a while live teaching as well. So musicians from March through May were pretty much shut down from being able to earn an income if they hadn't already built an internet presence of some kind. Everybody was offering lessons the first week.
Yeah.
And so, very few people actually knew how to do that online.
Yeah. That's a big one. Like, that's what saved me. You know what I mean?
Thankfully. You've always been a bit of a techie. You know, you've always known the value of how, like, you've got lighting I see back there and mics are set up. And I've heard your other podcasts. The drums sound terrific. They sound as good or better than anyone I've heard. You know what you're doing, and but you started on that journey way before there was a pandemic.
Exactly. I'm very lucky in how it lined up. To put it in perspective, from my perspective, and like in the network friendly network of musicians that you and I know, right? And even ones that we don't know. Let's say that's 1,000 people. No, 500 people, let's say.
Okay. Yeah, generously, it's 500 people.
Right? Social media, you're scrolling, and it was very common for you and I to see from each other, too, a post of like a picture, like you said, from the gig, right? Like, or a video from the gig. And what that's telling me and informing me is, oh, my buddy Lawrence he's working fucking at least 3 times a week gigging or something like that. This is good. This is great. Right.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what you're displaying and communicating. So then, but there are other people besides you that I saw that type of thing, like at least a photo. Right. And then this happened. Mm-hmm. And those photos and those videos went away and those
disappeared.
I have not, there are people that I'm like, are they alive?
I know. Me too.
And,
me too.
But you became, so you're, you know, there's like the get in the car, get the gear together, drive to the gig, get to the gig, set up, play for 3 hours, drive home.
That was my life. And when you talked to, I heard you talk to Rich and Kat about this,
yeah.
And Paul, that, you know, that was my life, a large part of my life for over a decade, give or take.
Yeah.
That was the main thing, was loading the gear, getting in and out of the place, driving to the gig, getting the GPS going. And I'm not saying this as like a catharsis or trying to like complain about it, but that's what I knew,
yeah.
You know, playing Tetris with the car, with the gear.
And you take away that travel, right? All that stuff, all that extra stuff, even leaving the house. So you became like a gigging musician and maybe 5% content creator.
Yes.
Now you are like 75% content creator.
Yes.
And I guess what I'm trying to display is Lawrence didn't disappear. You know, Lawrence is very much, if not more so, in my feed constantly every day.
And I apologize for that. That's tragic. I'm so sorry. I know that. And I'm not making fun of myself, but I do think about stuff like that. Is this too much? Am I doing this too often? Am I embarrassing myself? But the answer is no, because nobody cares.
That's not true, though.
The people that don't care already. And the people that do care, you're giving them more of you and more of what you offer. And that's service. That's a beautiful thing, I think.
I was going to say, you're actually giving that network of 500 people, you're giving, like I'll say us, you're giving us something. And how we feel about it is on us. But
yeah,
you're giving us, hey, I'm working here. Like, I ain't stopping. You're giving us, like, here's another one, guys. Here's another one. And I could choose to, like, project, oh, man, like, I'm not working that hard. I ain't practicing that much. Fuck, I haven't put out a drum video, you know, in a while. Or I can be like, holy shit, that's inspiring, man. Like, Lawrence is just not, he's not stopping for anybody. Like, he's not allowing this pandemic to fucking, so it's inspiring is what I'm saying.
Thank you. And that's amazing and wonderful to hear. And the former is a valid opinion too. I mean, this pandemic, even to this day, if a musician doesn't want to get up in the morning and, you know, try to write the next great album, I don't blame them. I mean, I have days like that too, quite often. Keeping up with it is not easy. If you don't have a strategy, if you don't bank 4 or 5 videos and plan what they're going to be and edit them and have them ready to go, and then knowing your hashtags and knowing when you're going to put the stuff out, it can be exhausting. It's like, oh, I got to have this ready for this day. But as soon as you fall, you're done. You're giving up, because they'll pile up like homework that you never did for that one class in college that you failed, that was the one blemish on your record. You just can't let that happen. You have to be consistent. It's just like gigging. If you say no to everything, eventually the phone will stop ringing.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. Yeah. I was going to say, because we did prepare something for today. Usually, right, the last
show and tell.
Yeah, like we're usually jamming, you know.
Before we segue, I haven't done this yet. I really, really want to thank you for your podcast, especially this year, 2020, and even now, of course, and compliment you for the wonderful work you've done in the world. I listen every week. And I'm not lying. I'm a podcast addict. And if I subscribe to someone on YouTube or a podcast, I try to listen to every episode, even if it's on 2 times, it completely. And I've listened to all of them. And it's an amazing, I texted you to say this, but I want to reiterate for the world, it's an amazing catalog. You're curating the people you know in the music business and the performance arts business and letting them tell their stories. And you're a great host. And I'm not just, you know, shiny on you. I really, it's wonderful, and please keep doing it. It's awesome, and I'm grateful to be here.
Dude, when you told me that, like a few days ago or last weekend, when you were like, "Yeah, man, it's like a part of my Sunday routine or something like that," you're running on the treadmill or exercising and listening, and then you said this, and you're like, "Yeah, I listen to yours, and then I'll listen to like Kevin Smith's." Or whatever.
Yeah, he comes out Sunday afternoons or Sunday nights, and then Marc Maron on Mondays and Thursday. There's a whole bunch of them, but you're Sunday morning, man. That's what it's turned into.
Awesome, man. That like lights me up, man. Because you know, it's like having a listener, and then versus having a listener who is, you're in what I do, like you're in it. You're a content creator, like. That, so meaning your opinion, actually, it's like fires me up to know like you're a dedicated listener and I'm not boring you.
And you know what? I got to be really truthful about something here. You've had some people on who, like, I take notes of things when I find a nugget of information that I think will be helpful to what I'm doing. And you've had people on, I've learned about mixing and mastering and touring, but stuff that's applicable to me, just hearing these different musicians and especially the home producer people who you've had on. I mean, it's incredible, the knowledge, the free knowledge that is available through your podcast in particular. I mean, everywhere on the internet, but for people not to take advantage of these stories and to learn, like, it's just, I feel bad for people who aren't doing that. I almost feel guilty when it's like, oh, wow, I just got a great bit of information here about how to, you know, cut, you know, 200K or whatever, and then what frequencies to rate or which reverbs to use. Or, I mean, you had some amazing live demonstrations, people creating music like live on the show and tracks. And I was just like, this is incredible. This is beautiful. This is as interesting and modern and contemporary and cool as music discussion can be. It's like the pinnacle of what the medium of a podcast really is. So
I appreciate it. Much appreciated. And yeah, every time you compliment me, you're like, okay, you give me this thought of like, just keep doing this. Cause sometimes, yeah, you're just like, fuck, I would love to go perform. I would love to just like not do a podcast episode one weekend because I have nothing else other to do. Like, I don't want that to be the reason. And I'd rather go and play a gig, man. I'll play a cover gig. Remember when I was telling
you? I like how you say that, because I know that you were cover band retired. I'll do it. I'll play Chicken Fried. I'll do it.
Let's do it. You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. Much appreciated. Very helpful to hear it.
That was weird, by the way, when I got out. My first gig was in August. And being out there, I mean, I was careful, you know, even outside with the mask and everything, which was just weird, you know, playing in a mask. I got used to it. But jumping into that for the first time in 5 months or something, and then playing with other people, something I've done my whole life, having not done it for 5 months, the longest period since I first started playing bass, it was just bizarre. And then, you know, you get into it and you're cool. But that first tune, man, I was rushing, I was dragging, I was the touch of the instrument, the feeling of the strap on my arm, hearing a drummer next to me, it was freaking me out, you know?
Oh my God, though. When you settled into it, though, it was probably like, oh, okay, I missed this.
Yeah, of course. Totally.
And also,
sorry to interrupt the show and tell portion.
No, that's okay. I mean, now, because they got me like thinking, like, even just seeing a performance, man. Like, do you know how bad I'm craving seeing like a real good show? Like, even just some jazz club in the city.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it has been a renaissance of music overall, I think, this year. I've seen heard some great albums and seen some great performances. There's one guitar player on YouTube, forgive me, I forget his name, but he's been getting together these super groups of like Jimmy Haslip on bass, or Keith Carlock on drums, Mike Stern on guitar. He just seems to like cherry pick all of the best fusion and jazz players, and he just does these awesome, well-produced videos. And I don't know, once a week or every other week, Victor Wooten was on there. And it's just like, I'm looking at this stuff and I'm like, this would not have happened if Jimmy Haslip was on tour here and Stern was playing in New York every night and Carluck was with whoever, Steely Dan. I mean, it just wouldn't have happened. And now it's there forever. So that is a cool thing, I think.
Fuck yeah, man. I'm going to have to like text you. You're going to have to send me that. That sounds awesome, dude.
I will.
That sounds awesome. All right. So let's jump into this, because I've been really excited about this. So cool. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You and I kind of, this podcast is always going to be about our collaboration. And so we couldn't do that because it wasn't live in person, but we were like, fuck this. We're gonna do something special. So here's what happened, everybody. So Lawrence sent me a musical idea, and then I recorded and tracked drums on. Now, he has not heard what I tracked, right? And I recorded a drum track, different idea, and sent it, mixed it, and sent it to Lawrence. And I have no idea what he put on my track. So we're going to...
It's like a game show, the way you're setting it up. Lawrence has not heard Anthony's track.
He is not the father.
You never know.
Like, so like, I'm super excited because, yeah, like, I can't wait to see your reaction. And I can't wait to hear what you did for my track. So this is going to be super cool. So let's do your tune first. I'm gonna try to do this.
You ever see those things on YouTube? It's like kid reacts to hearing Led Zeppelin for the first time, and it's the kid's like, "What is this?" They hear like Bonham's drums, and like, "This is so dope!" And that's what this reminds me of.
Kid reacts to Empire Strikes Back. I am your father. You ever see that?
No, that, I got to check that one out. I got Disney Plus. I just finally watched whatever it is, Rise of the Jedi, the last one, whatever it was.
Okay, right. No, Mandalorian. Did you see that?
I haven't yet. It's now that I've subscribed, it's in my queue. It wasn't Sith. Skywalker wasn't a bad movie. You could just tell that J.J. Abrams came back into the trilogy and was like, "All right, we got to finish this. We didn't have a plan, so this is what we're doing."
Dude, it's, you know what it is, man. Huh? It's like you it's like you ordered a plate of food, and like one portion of the food was really good, and then that other portion they fucked it up, and then they just put it back in the microwave for like maybe 10 more. You know what I mean?
It's just, yeah, this will be good enough to get you through. I think the era of the trilogy is over. I think because of the streaming model now, it's really about, I mean, Mandalorian and all these other Star Wars shows, there's obviously they're going to follow the MCU model, forgive this tangent, of doing like six different shows, and then there's a big team up show, and then that those six characters, Obi-Wan and Mandalorian and whatever, they all battle some big bad in the ultimate, you know, crossover show, and then they get a billion more subscribers for that. I think that's what it is. And it's the long form storytelling, is I think people are more into that than a trilogy. I mean, I couldn't remember the characters' names when the movie started. I was like, well, what's the name of the one guy, and who's the pilot that's supposed to be like the Han Solo? Like, it was just like, oh yeah, that's right, that's who he is, that's what happened to that guy.
We could stay on this for like another couple minutes, because I've always had the idea of, this is prior to the Daredevil and the Jessica Jones, like prior to those. I remember,
which I loved.
They're great.
Daredevil season 3 finale with Kingpin.
It's fucking awesome.
Emmy award winning.
Amazing.
Vincent D'Onofrio, people, come on.
I really got into Lost back in the day. Like, I really loved that show. And I loved how every episode was somewhat dedicated to like one character, and they would do like these flashbacks to tell their story, deepen their storyline. Well, I always thought, like, wouldn't X-Men be great, like, if they did it that way?
That's a good idea.
Right? Instead of doing like these, sorry, shitty movies, and not getting the characters right and having to squeeze all these information, all this, like, this story that not everybody's, you know, like, down with, let's be honest, because they leave out a lot. Well, why leave things out? Why not? Yeah.
It's like the actor will just go, and that's why they call me the Juggernaut. It's like, that's why.
That's right.
Maybe. Yeah, I think X-Men is a good vehicle to take each character and develop them. You know, they'll introduce how mutants arrive in the MCU, and then they'll set each one up. And then the X-Men won't actually happen until 3 years later, when Wolverine meets Storm and Professor X and whatever.
I hope they do that, man. That'd be great.
That'd be cool.
Oh, we got, this is, do you have a name for your idea, by the way?
I just called them both New Year's Cast. I was like, New Year's Podcast. I don't know. It seems to be a weird thing. So the one I sent you is New Year's Cast, and then the one that you sent me, I called New Year's Cast too, but you can call them whatever you want.
All right, cool. So New Year's Cast, this is part one, Lawrence's idea. Here we go. Let me know if you can hear this.
I can hear it.
Awesome. Okay, here we go.
That is dope. Oh, man. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, man. Thank you. That was cool.
So, that was like some Thunder, you turned into like Thundercat, Flying Lotus, like Prague hip hop, man. That's killing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wow. For listeners, like there was a there was a night maybe like 2 weeks ago where I was like, hey man, could you like give me I can't find your drum beats.
I can shorten what you're saying here to where's the one?
I was like, where's the one? Because I was interpreting it in two ways, I remember. And I was just fucking around. And it's so funny because what you sent me was you just sent me like a tapping of where the one was.
Yeah, because I hadn't recorded to a click. See what I did for that synth part. Do you hear that scratching the background? It's my dog trying to get in here. If you can't hear it, then we'll just disregard it. Okay. So basically, that was a sequencer part that I didn't track to a click because the sequencer is its own little metronome. And so then I played bass to that and didn't have an actual tempo set up, and I didn't realize what tempo it was sequenced to. I had to create like a clapping thing with that.
But that saved my ass, and it's so funny. I'm gonna tell you straight up. That took like 13 takes, and like, I mean, I remember too, even during a bunch of the takes, I remember I flipped the beat. So then count one was on a different, I'm like, fuck, well, okay, now I switched the one. You're in the middle of a take, and now I have to think about, okay, I need to interpret this so I still know that those notes come in, maybe not on one, but on the and or the up.
You're feeling where you need the two and four or the one to be when you're not quite sure of what I programmed it to be. No, but it sounded great, man. It sounded displaced and funky. And it was a part. I mean, and the ending was really cool. Dude, excellent. Like, super creative. And like, when I was, this is a compliment, not what I was expecting. You never know. Like, usually you send a drum or something and you get two and four. And it's like, okay, cool. Two and four is nice, but I'm not tracking Billie Jean here. I want something new and fresh, you know?
It was a great challenge, man. It was really... It was kind of why I needed that in a way, because it kind of whipped my ass a little bit.
Awesome. Cool.
Awesome. We're going to listen to part two now. So I recorded this and sent it to Lawrence, and I'm super excited, dude. All right, here we go. Again, same here. I did not expect that. I mean, you made that sound smooth. Like I felt like what I played was aggressive. But you kind of like really smoothed it out. You gotta send me that audio.
I put that in the folder for you.
And for listeners, we're gonna, you know, this is not just a audio track. I mean, we have a video coming out for both of these. They'll be on Instagram and I mean, I can remember even back in the summer, we were like, yeah, man, we got to do some collaborate, you know, and I'm glad that at least we're doing the podcast, and then maybe we can maintain the collaboration stuff too, man. That'd be, you know, because obviously that was fun.
So much fun. Can I talk about my approach to what you sent me? Because it was briefly.
Absolutely.
Cool. So basically, when I heard that, I was like, you know, it's two parts, kind of. One sort of a broken beat kind of Dilla-esque thing, but not quite super behind the beat. And then the other thing's more of a jungle JoJo thing. And forgive me for pigeonholing your playing, but I immediately, you know, to what I like to do is say, what speaks to me right away? What does this remind me of? And what can I do with that? And that's right in my head. I went with those two areas. And so I said, for the sort of first part, I was like, all right, let me go like sort of behind the beat with it, sort of blues based line, and sort of try and get that contrast of like me being a little behind and you being somewhat behind but still kind of on the beat. And then you get that nice mix of rhythmic balance with a little bluesy kind of phrasing and what I think is a decent bass tone. And then when you launch in, I went for the more sort of active but not too active, because what you were playing is super active, so it's a moving bass line with more of a legato kind of thing. And I'll just say this, like, I had this idea of like, the first part is like you're stumbling on the rocks on the island, you know, trying to get around. And then when you get on the boat, you got that nice sail where you're, you know, hitting the waves and kind of leaping over that JoJo Mea part. And then you land again to the rocky shores of the Dilla part. So, and then it was like a Wurlitzer chord progression I came up with. That was a little bit sort of Herbie Hancock ripping him off a little bit.
Cool, man. Super. I can't wait to mix that and compress everything and
cool.
Bring it to life, man. And our videos are like, my videos are better, like quality and lighting and all that stuff. You know, you put out great videos too. So I'm even looking forward to like editing that all together, making content, man.
It's fun, man. I mean, for people who aren't doing it, it's just fun to do. It's not that difficult. And the end product is, it's like, wow, I made a song with my friend and I made a music video. When I was a kid watching MTV, that seemed impossible to me.
Right.
Watching Pearl Jam rock out, you know, Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder singing I'm Going Hungry on a beach, it just seemed like another world that I could only view through my television or eventually see in a concert. But now we can do this. We have the ability to do this from our living rooms, our bedrooms. So I just hope for more people that they collaborate in this way and they take the opportunity to network in this way, because it's not that hard.
I wonder this idea, like, because it's such a cool idea to like send it to somebody not knowing what they're going to do. And then maybe it could be like, what is it called? What do they call that? When rumors are spread, what do they call that?
Like a game of telephone or something like that?
Yeah. Like, what if you did that? Where I sent something to you, you recorded something on that, and then you sent that to somebody else with the two ideas. They recorded something on that. They sent that to like two other people, and then the vocalist is last.
Wow, that would be crazy.
And you can call it a pandemo or something.
Pandemo. I love it, man. That's a killing idea. That's great.
Probably find like two other musicians.
Yeah, man. I mean, I kind of curate people I know. You know, these guitar players would be good. These from all over the world, frankly. And I'd love to get something like that going. That's a great idea. And we could just pass the hot potato along and then at the end give it to a singer and say, turn this into a tune, like a song. And then if we dig it, we could release it or something. You never know what could happen.
Make a video. You know, like, super easy to do. I mean, if everybody does it like the same way and whatever, it's actually like not that hard to do. It's just, right? It's just getting the feel, getting a vibe for.
It's all about vibe, man. I think that's the big word for creating original music, in my opinion. It's creating an atmosphere, setting a tone, and then you fill in melody, harmony, rhythm.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, I've had, you know, loosely other people have like reached out, hey, you know, I like your videos, like, could you send me something and I'll record something over it. So yeah, two other guys recently like mixed something that should be coming out soon. But I'm like, you got me really thinking, like, I kind of like this is really cool. I like the I like taking an idea and giving it to somebody else not knowing what they're going to do with it. I kind of like that a lot.
Yeah, man. It's a great idea. It's a great concept, and it's something that we should pursue. You should pursue. It's people love stuff like that. They love to know that people are being creative in this time, and it inspires other musicians, and it catches fire. Other people start to take the idea, and then they do something cool with it. So I love it.
What's so for 2021, what are some Lawrence Haber goals?
Well, truthfully, maintenance, you know, to keep this going. I mean, the big thing is this, what I'm basically doing is a single a month, And that was just something I, like a proof of concept. Can I do this from my home? Can I make singers and sort of master them up to a point that I'm pleased with and learning a little bit about how that works? And one a month is better than doing an album. It's manageable. It's programming some drums or working with a drummer and then adding in other elements or writing a melody or chords or an upright line and then creating around that. And just short, like again, musical statements, maybe 2 to 3 minute little songs. They're singles, and I put one out a month, and my goal is to keep that pace up through the end of the year. So I guess it's 12 singles this year. And then I've got a couple of projects I'm working on remotely, actually, that are coming to fruition that I could promote briefly. The first is my buddy Duke Clement and I. He's a drummer as well, wonderful drummer, and he's been creating some really cool original music. And in addition to that, he and I have been doing some collaborative 1 minute musical statement things, and he's really into video and audio editing. We put one out a couple of weeks ago that I titled Momentum's Moment, because I'm all about momentum during this time. And the moment that you get that momentum, you got to ride it and be creative. So we put that out, and it got a nice response. And we've got some other things cooking. And then a really awesome jazz guitar player in the style of Pat Metheny, my friend Jim Popick. He's got this acoustic jazz duo thing with me where I'm playing upright bass and he's playing acoustic guitar. It's called Acoustic Sketches. And it's on Bandcamp, on his Bandcamp. But we're going to be releasing it every few weeks or months. And we're just doing a couple of really nice mellow tracks where he plays some standards and some original stuff on acoustic guitar, and he does some overdubs, and then I play upright bass, and it's just the two colors are really nice together. And then he's going to have painters that he knows. He's going to feature their work in the videos for these tunes.
That's cool. That's the other part of things. I really like that part, which is the visual side, and just giving it to somebody who's like, that's their thing. They make maybe interpreting music into visual. That's cool, man. I like that.
And honestly, just to stay healthy and creative and keep executing on my plans, you know, keep the Instagram thing going. I want to grow my YouTube presence a little more this year, and then gig when it's, you know, when it's right, and it's you know, taking cool gigs with cool friends, basically, when it's safe and healthy and all that good stuff, and just in general, but not being like, I have to do 100 cover band dates just because that's what I always do. You know, being selective is good too.
Absolutely. Can we name actually some of these singles that you put out? So I have Montreal.
Montreal is the most recent one, about a famous trip that I took with some friends many years ago to that wonderful city. I love Montreal and Canada in general. And then there's one called In the Bucket, where I'm playing, I'm showing off different sides of my bass character. I'm a huge Marcus Miller fan, so I do that kind of attack thumb thing that he does with the melody, a little Jaco type melody, and then upright. And then the other one is called Cleverness Cost, which is sort of a bass centric atmospheric thing. You know, it's weird to describe your own music. It almost feels like very arrogant to do that, but those are the three I got so far, and I'm going to be doing some more.
Very cool. So this is part of the every month you're putting out.
Yeah, those are my weekly, my monthly single releases, and I'm doing that on you know, all the regular streaming and download platforms, iTunes, Spotify, and all those things.
Awesome, man.
Awesome. And I'm going to shout out real quick. Always, I am a GHS Strings endorsing artist and a Bartolini Pickups emerging artist. And, you know, I always shout them out, promote them. It's all my basses use their strings and their pickups. Fantastic sound and, you know, keeps me inspired.
Awesome, dude. Awesome. I mean, yeah, like we could continue to chat, but at first, before we even, let's just, listeners, right now, go follow Lawrence if you haven't already. Lawrence Haber. Lawrence Haber Music on Instagram.
Yep, Lawrence Haber Music on the socials. YouTube and Instagram are the big two. Just look up Lawrence Haber Music. I was very happy to reach 100 YouTube subscribers after a lot of work this year, and that allows you to have your YouTube URL, you know, youtube.com/Lawrence Haber Music. So that was kind of a cool little milestone. 1,000 is the big one. That's sort of another goal this year. But 100 allowed me to have that Lawrence Haber Music. So check that out.
Definitely check that out, lawrencehabermusic.com. You actually have a really nice website, man.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Really, everything.
And it's got photos and, you know, past gigs and all kinds of fun stuff on there. Check that out, too. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Previous Is it anxiety log? Is that?
Yeah, that was an EP I did back in 2015. I just always wanted to put sort of my own record out. And at that time, I wanted to write about my struggles with anxiety and in life and all the emotions that come with that, and create a little sort of journey, like 20-minute, half-hour musical story arc through that journey, through a couple of singer-songwriter stuff. It's not really a bass thing. Most of my stuff is bass-centric, but this was more little singer-songwritery with some spicy Radiohead, U2 influences, me playing everything, guitar, drums, bass, keys, singing. It's an interesting piece.
I didn't know this. I'm going to listen to this. I have this ready to go.
Thank you. Everyone who hears it is surprised. Like, oh, this is you. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate anyone listening to it. It's I make no promises, but thank you for taking an interest.
Yeah, I didn't even know about it. I'm really curious. Okay, cool. There's six tracks on it. Very cool. I'm going to be listening.
Yeah. Thank you. Cool. Check that out too, everyone. It's there.
On your YouTube, I'm just real fast. Look, I'm on your site too, but you have a bunch of, like educational, like bass player videos out. You have a number of them.
Yes. I'd like to start going back into that. I want to be a little more deliberate with what I do, but when I first joined YouTube, I wanted to be a weekly YouTuber offering bass and music theory educational content. And I study with Evan Marion, who we've talked about. I study with Gerald Veasley, J.D. DeServio from Black Label Society. I study with him for a while. And my first teacher, my mentor, Joe McCaro. And I'm very studious, as you know, you've already described. I just love studying and practicing and transcribing and learning. And I wanted to share some of the stuff I've learned over the years. And it's not a typical course the way that a lot of bass books or music theory books go. I feel like I have my own way of explaining things that might be helpful to students at different levels, to sort of unraveling some of the more challenging aspects of music theory, but bass as well.
I mean, that's very valuable. I mean, like there is this thing of somebody who's an expert at something and they don't know how to communicate their deep knowledge of something. And I almost feel like, I don't know, I almost feel like if I can't share what I know, that's boring to me. I feel like if I can't break it down, I jump at the opportunity when somebody's curious and wants to know something. It's like, yeah, so that's valuable. You having your perspective on it and ability to break it down and deliver it. So.
Yeah, I wish another thing I wish more people would do. I mean, we all have knowledge and wisdom to offer the world of our own experiences in our own way, and you might find people that understand things the way you do, and so they'll really identify with it and maybe hone what they're doing. Or you'll find people who are looking for your way of explaining things. That's why everyone should do these things, because yes, there's a million people doing it, but no one's you. And you're going to have a way of saying things and doing things that is unique to you and that might be helpful to people who learned in the way that you learn.
That's right. That's right. Cool, man. What else is going on as far as your music listening? That's what I'm curious. What are you listening to?
Well, I love talking about this. I love talking shop, but I haven't done a lot of like music listening discussion with my friends. I mean, I'll text people like, check this out. I do this to you too. Check this out. Did you hear this record? So what I kind of knew that I was hoping you'd ask. So I pulled up my Apple Music from you know recent times, I guess, just to pick some things here. That I mean, Tom Misch. I know you mentioned him, man.
Yeah.
All the records.
Yeah.
All the records. I mean, it's killing it. I went back. To stuff that comforted me. I mean, I did this with Netflix and stuff too, because at the beginning of the pandemic, I felt, you know, you just need to be comfortable and feel good. And I was trying to listen to records and things that had, speak to me and are sort of universally mine that I always feel good listening to. And three that come to mind, well, the first one is Marcus Miller, his Sun Don't Lie record, which is a great Marcus record. It's great melodies, great playing. It's a must have. There is this unbelievable early 80s record by this dude called Don Blackman that is the funkiest thing you'll ever hear. You got to check it out. And there's all kinds of crazy bass parts on it that it's just, it's a must listen, and I just cherish it. It's like one of those things I'll put on and be like, yeah, I love that one. I love that one. Jaco's first solo record, of course, for any fusion fan. And then I would just go on these, you know, these journeys of like, I'm going to listen to all the Beatles records today. And so I, you know, I got my Beatles poster in the back. I'm a huge Beatles fan. And I listened to, you know, Sgt. Pepper, and I listened to Abbey Road, and just taking in the depth of those pieces and the musicianship of those pieces and the fully formed artistic statements of that band and that writing is just, it's crazy. I mean, I'm going through here real quick because I know you probably looking like for singles, just because there's just so much stuff's been coming out left and right. Let's see. Mono Neon, everything he puts out is awesome. His latest, he's got a little EP out that's just killing.
I haven't listened to his solo material. I've only seen his like video content. So
he's played great guitar and he sings awesome. He's just like Prince's. He's like, you know, if Prince were still around, it's sort of the, and was 20, 25 or whatever. This is the music he would be writing. It's just fearless music. Strangely, I mean, there's so many weird things here. When MF Doom died, I realized this was not part of my vocabulary. So I went in and I know there's this one particular album here that has Madlib from a couple of years ago. And so that's been in my circulation, my playlist to get me more of that sort of stuff. I mean, there's just so much stuff here, dude. It's hysterical. It's like I feel like I'm on the hot seat.
Take your time.
Oh man, here's one. Okay, have you heard? There's an album with called the Philadelphia Experiment with Questlove on drums and Pat Martino on guitar and Christian McBride on electric bass, and I think upright bass too. And it's like three Philly legends just playing improvised funk hip hop infused jazz fusion. It's just,
I'm typing all this stuff in right now and like bookmarking it right now.
Oh, I could fill your cup. Becca Stevens' latest.
Oh yeah, yeah. What's that called?
From Ground Up. I'm not sure what the record is called, but there's a tune called Slow Burn on there that's really hip.
Oh man. Now hold on. Was that from? That's like 2020.
I think so.
Okay, because I love her 2015 one.
I don't think I've heard that one. I'll have to check it out.
It's awesome. But I'm now you got me. Okay.
Oh, I got to shout out my teacher and my friend, Evan Marion.
Sure, sure.
His latest record, Parallels, this should be your first listen. It's him and drummer, bass player, Dana Hawkins. It's like...
Hawkins, yep.
It's kind of like 80s... I don't know how to describe this. 80s dance pop, but like with all of the depth of harmony and musicianship that only like a modern... bass virtuoso and drummer virtuoso in the fusion idiom could do. Like it's very clever. It's like Dirty Loops, but a little, I would say a little more accessible to a pop listener.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
And it's just got great, great colors on there.
Okay, cool. Evan Marion
and Dana Hawkins.
Gotcha. Cool. All right.
A couple more. I'll do a couple more. Oh, I listened to Nate Smith's Pocket Change, where he's just got all it's an album of just drum solo works, and it's very compositional, and it just gives me ideas for programming and how to, you know, come up with bass parts with a great drummer like him, man.
You said Nate Smith?
Yeah, Nate Smith, man, the one and only.
The one and only. So hold on, he has an album out. He put an album out with a band, but is this something different?
This is him solo.
Him solo,
just playing drums. It's all these drum improv compositions.
Is it Light and Shadow?
Is it called Light and Shadow? Is it called Pocket Change? I think it's called Pocket Change.
Got a new one called Light and Shadow. I see Pocket Change right now, and Kinfolk is the one that I listened to from years ago. All right, so yeah, I listened to from him, which is cool.
I'm gonna give you more. This has been killing. Larnell Lewis, check out. He's got two albums out that are really, really awesome. Let me type in Evan. I'll throw a couple more at you. I'm looking for titles here.
Oh, by the way, this is for listeners too. Like, get on it. You know what I mean?
Go. The new Dirty Loops is really good too.
Dirty Loops. Okay.
Yep. The new Dirty Loops. There's a tune on there called Rock You I really dig. I mean, overall, it's just the playing is great.
Yeah, if you haven't heard Dirty Loops, by the way, like, it'll blow your fucking mind. I mean, those guys...
Yeah, the playing is ridiculous. It's unreal. Peak.
Dirty Loops.
I'm gonna throw a few more. Jeez. Always listen to Thundercat. He's always in there. Any Christian McBride, that's another, as far as bass players go. But any Thundercat, I'll put him on any time, and he, it just excites me.
Thundercat, cool.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to go. Here we go. What's been looking for, like, top plays here? All the Bill Evans Trio stuff. Oh, here's somebody I got a shout out. His name is John L. Smith. He's a bass player. He's on Instagram. And he's got a record out that came out, I think, in 2020. I think it's just self-titled. I think it's just under his name. But it's like neo-soul stuff. And he's got this chordal approach to bass playing where he's playing that neo-soul kind of behind the beat, really like slurred chords where he'll like slur into the different voicings and but on the bass, you know, on a four string electric bass, and he writes these beautiful compositions, and then other people come in and sing over the tunes, and you see all these great players. John L. Smith, J-O-N.
John. All right, here he is.
And there's Tom Misch again.
Which one, by the way, those two albums, he's got Geography, which I fucking love Geography. That was probably the album of the year for me. I listened to the shit out of that album. But then even the new one, What Kind of Music, I think it's called.
Yeah, awesome.
Very different, but very, very good. Both of them very good. I like that style, man.
Okay. It's a cool style. You ever hear of Mr. Barrington?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. That's, hold on, don't say his name. Come on. God damn it.
Well, I'll tell you, Owen Biddle on bass and then Zach Danziger on drums. And I think Ollie Rockberger on keys. Just a fun instrumental trio that writes interesting, funny, kind of ironic tunes. Great singing, great playing. They're always in my playlist. Oh, man. I mean, here's an Instagram sensation, Butcher Brown, man. You got to know Butcher Brown. Everyone follows Butcher Brown on Instagram. Just awesome, awesome playing. And what's the album called? Let's see. Show album. It's called King Butch, hashtag King Butch, with the hashtag in the title.
Got it.
I'm a nut job with my Apple Music. I just keep loading stuff in that I never listen to. You ever listen to Chon?
C-H-O-N?
They're kind of that progressive metal, C-H-O-N, that has that crystal, real clean, crystally guitar, you know, with it's like there's metal riffs, it's like gent metal, but sometimes they weave in a lot of clean tone, and it's just nice sort of modal stuff. It's good listening music if you're into metal but you don't want like really heavy distorted guitars. It's a good balance, and they paint with nice musical colors. They're definitely worth checking out.
They have Chon, like self-titled 2019, and then Chon self-titled 2015. Is that, am I correct with that?
Probably, yeah. I don't know if there are album titles, but yeah, check them out. Oh man, well, let's go classic. Somebody may have talked about this on your show, but classic album, I love it, I'll put on anytime, is 10 Summoner's Tales by Sting. I mean, it's a perfect record. Interesting songs, great lyrics, great singing, great musicianship. Vinny on some tracks. It's just amazing.
I don't know this album. I have to listen to this.
Yeah, that's a classic Sting record. It's got If I Ever Lose My Faith on there, Fields of Gold. It's just one of those like classic early 90s singer-songwriter albums that just hit all. He was like at the peak of his powers, Sting. It's a really great record.
Awesome. That's in the list now.
Yeah, that'd probably be the place to start, man. It's just such a classic. And just a lot of odds and ends from all my different favorite musicians and singer-songwriters and bands over the years. I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, so I always go back. Actually, one thing I wish to mention for the listeners out there, something really fun is on YouTube, there's this bass player named Guy Pratt, and he is an English English cat that played with Pink Floyd, and I think he still plays with David Gilmour when David Gilmour plays, and he's like almost like the English Pino Palladino. I mean, he plays every style. He plays fretless. He plays five string. He plays, you know, passive jazz and P bass tones. He's got all those sounds. He's a real studio musician, and a real touring musician. And he's got a YouTube channel where he basically does playthroughs of all his classic tracks and talks about the recording sessions and tells these great stories. So I made a playlist of all the songs that he's presented on his channel. I mean, he played on Like a Prayer by Madonna. He played on Earth Song by Michael Jackson. I mean, so he's that level, MJ and Madonna. And then he played on a bunch of Pink Floyd records and live records, and just a mishmash of a who's who of different singer-songwriters. And I've learned about a whole bunch of new bands through Guy Pratt. So
Guy Pratt. Okay.
Well, new old bands that have been around since the 80s, who I haven't never even heard of.
I just put up the link here for myself for later for his YouTube channel.
And he's so funny. I mean, he's got a personality about him, and it's great to hear. Lee Sklar, another legendary bass player, he started doing YouTube this year, and he just talks about songs he's played on, and it just tells the stories of being in the studio with all of the great legends of pop music and how he came up with a line for James Taylor or Phil Collins or whatever. It's like amazing to that's another thing from COVID. A great blessing we got, you know, Lee Sklar is not on the road and not in the studio at all. So now he's on YouTube telling everyone what he's been through. And now we have that. We have Lee Sklar, we have Guy Pratt, we have these legends offering their knowledge because they're not going to be here forever. And sure. And now it's archived and anyone can find it, which is awesome. You got to keep it, pay it forward, this knowledge.
Yeah, it's funny. It's every time I like learn something new, like these, you just gave me about like seven new things, like even people I've never listened to. And that pulls me out of my funk, man. That really, like, it's like you can have a shitty day or, hey, why don't you listen to this album? You've never heard this. And then that, you know, just to think like, wow, man, like I have access to that forever, I hope. Like I don't have to go down to the CD store, wow, and buy it.
Date yourself.
Yeah, man. Like I have now. You gave me a lot to listen to. It's probably gonna, and that's the other thing. It informs your playing in some way. It definitely.
If you don't find, not you, but if people don't find something from everything, if you're a musician that's really honest about your journey and your growth, if you don't find something from everything you listen to, even if you learn something that doesn't appeal to you, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have an idea based on what you just, that, you know, list of things that you just said, pretty much just like unveiled to me of, hey, did you know that this exists? Here's what another thing you kind of started to go into, and I think this would be a great for the next episode you do.
Okay.
I think we should definitely do another, collaboration where we don't know, you know, what's going to be played. And then for that second half, tell me if you're into this. I think this would be fantastic. We both maybe get like, make a list of 10 songs. Don't even have to like cover all of them, but 10 songs that when you listen to the bass part, for me, the drums, that you're just like, holy shit. And it's one of those parts where you're like, I didn't think, it wasn't until I had knowledge of this instrument that when I went back and listened to the song again, it could be like a Madonna song, for instance, like you said, immediately made me think of Like a Prayer. The drums on there are fantastic. Or like a song like, what's that Vanessa Carlton song?
Thousand Miles?
Thousand Miles. Like that drum is really, really sick, really good. So like, that'd be cool to make like a couple.
I love that. Yeah. Or we could get real niche about it, is like 10 songs you play on cover band gigs that have a lot more musical depth than you realize, that were influential on you. You took something from that you incorporated into your playing, or I don't know, five songs that you didn't realize it was so-and-so on the record, and you couldn't believe that it was them playing and it was that sound, or, you know, like there's a lot of cool niche things within that would be fun to mess around with too.
That'd be fantastic. So you heard it, everybody. That's expect next time.
Deep listening exercises. Or even you could be like, hey, here's a song I like that I love. you listen to it. Tell me if you dig it, and if so, how do you dig it? What do you like about it? What do you observe about it? Almost like a musicology thing where you're digging in and mentioning things that appeal to you.
I really fucking like this idea. So the next time listeners hear Lawrence on the show, that's what we're going to be doing. So, dude, thanks for being on for a third time, man. You know, like nobody else. I thought of no one else. I was like, for the start of 2021, I was like, it has to be Lawrence, without a doubt.
Man, so. I really am truly honored and humbled, and I love the podcast, and I love you, and keep doing your thing, bro. And I'm really grateful, and this was a fun one, I think. I hope people enjoy what we had to talk about today.
I think so, for sure. Definitely. All right, listeners, Lawrence Haber Music on Instagram. Go to lawrencehabermusic.com. Find all his music. All right, he put out 3 singles so far, right? He's got more coming out every
3
month.
3 singles and hopefully every month.
And then also Anxiety Log came out a couple years ago. Go listen to this stuff. Go show him some love. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And yeah, take care. But dumb biz to you.